Well, good day. Morning, brothers and sisters. This indeed is my first one here, and good to be here and amongst you. And I obviously bring the Whanganui Ecclesia, ask that I bring their greetings when I come up and speak, so I'll bring their greetings as well. Haven't seen them for a while, actually. My theme of my exhortation this morning is full engagement with Jesus. That's the theme that I've taken. And it's based, not based, but the impetus of giving it was on a book that I'm currently reading called The Power of Full Engagement. It's been quite a fascinating book for me because what it says is in essence that you need to focus on energy management and not time management. Our world is so focused by time, everything is done to the clock, and if it doesn't fit within that, well, you know, time moves on. And what they're advocating is that effectively that look at how you're spending your energy in your day, and to understand within your day where you have maximum energy and where you have times that you need to sort of sit back and contemplate and almost recharge your batteries. Because in essence, if you actually do your best work while you have your maximum energy, that's when you're actually going to effectively do your best, rather than trying to trudge along when you're tired and exhausted. So what I looked at, some of the episodes within the Bible, and I thought, well, let me actually look and contemplate how Jesus interacted with people and how he actually got their full engagement into a particular conversation, and how he was able to maximize that. So the question I asked is, when are people fully engaged with Jesus? What are the experiences that are happening and the circumstances that are happening when they are fully interacting with him, and effectively there's some good results? So I've got four questions here that I'll ask, and we'll go through them each. Is it while he was preaching? So this is while he was standing somewhere and actually talking to people. Was it when there were possibly functions that he was at? Or is it what I call in inverted commas the coffee shop experience, where he was sort of having a sit down tea time chat with them? Or was it, what about one-on-one conversations? So if we look at those in general, and we'll quickly nip through some of those, when would be the places where there was the maximum energy and the maximum engagement that was taking place between those people? So the first one, let's just quickly go to one of them, and that's Matthew chapter 5. And we'll look at a typical one. This is now Jesus preaching. And we'll have a look at that. So Matthew chapter 5, as we know, is the Sermon on the Mount. Now in my Bible, I have what I call red-coloured writing, which is where Jesus is speaking, and I've got black-coloured writing where Jesus isn't speaking. And it starts off in Matthew 5. Now when he saw the crowds, he went up on a mountainside and sat down. And his disciples also came to him, and he began to preach them, that's the crowds, saying. And he goes on, blessed are those that are poor. Now my Bible, just to show you, so if I hold up my Bible like this, yours might not have red writing. So I've just read the first two verses of the Bible, okay, and then everything goes red from there onwards. Okay, you can see it's all red, 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 red. He does a Sermon on the Mount, red, 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 red. So this is a one-way conversation that's taking place. Red, 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 okay. All the way to chapter 7, red, 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 red. This is all Jesus speaking now. And you might not be able to see. And then it all goes all the way through, and we close it off at the end of chapter 7, now in verse 28. And it says, when Jesus had finished saying these things, so he's come all the way to the end of his sermon now, the crowds were amazed at his teaching, because he taught as one who had authority, and not as the teachers of the law. Full stop. So what was the engagement there that actually took place? It was Jesus standing up and preaching, and the people contemplated and they were amazed, and then life goes on. Because then chapter 8 comes and life happens and it goes on. So you can see there wasn't, if I can call it that, that much engagement. We can look back on the words that he said and we can say that they were powerful words. Were there conversions and strong engagement? You can't really debate that because the material's not there for us. Let's move on then to another one, as I call, okay, is there strong engagement with Jesus at a function? Okay, so let's go to one of those, and that was the wedding, where he turned water into wine. So come with me to John chapter 2. And this is the session, and in John they called signs. Now the signs are miracles, and this is where he turns water into the wine at a wedding. So we pick it up in verse 1 there. It says, on the third day, a wedding took place in Cana of Galilee. So we know it's a function. Jesus, his mother was there, and Jesus and his disciples had also been invited to the wedding. So quite a good occasion, and weddings are generally nice, happy occasions. In verse 3, the wine started flowing, and when the wine was gone, Jesus' mother said to him, they have no more wine. And so you have this conversation now taking place between Jesus, that Mary, the mother of Jesus, and Jesus. And it goes through, Jesus then speaks to the servants in verse 7, said to the servants, fill the jars with wine, so they filled them. Verse 8, and he told them, now draw the wine and take it to the master. So they took it to the master, and he is amazed. He says in verse 10, he says, everyone brings out the choice wine first, and then the cheaper wine afterwards, when they've had too much to drink. But you brought out the best wine now. So they're amazed at why all this good wine has arrived now. And 11, and this is the first of his miraculous signs Jesus performed in Cana of Galilee. He thus revealed his glory, and his disciples put their faith in him. So was there much engagement? Was there much interaction that took place with Jesus? And you'd have to say, actually not much. He actually performed a miracle. So that was the sign. But was there much interaction and engagement that actually took place? Possibly not so much. So now what I'm going to do is we're going to click now to a different scenario and actually look at what I call the tea time or coffee shop interactions that actually take place. And actually, let's go to one of those. And where's a famous tea time interaction that took place in the New Testament? Was with Zacchaeus. All right, so let's head over to Zacchaeus and actually let's have a look at how the interaction and energy management takes place there. So we're going to go to Zacchaeus chapter 19, Luke chapter 19. And we're going to look at the covers about a couple of verses here, and we'll look at the interaction that actually takes place. So we start off in verse 19, verse 1. So Jesus is on his way and he enters into Jericho, the town of Jericho, and he's passing through. So Jesus is tending to actually come to Jericho and actually walk his way through Jericho. And then number 2, a man was there, his name was Zacchaeus, and he was the chief tax collector and he was wealthy. So not a flash person that everybody liked, but he was a wealthy man. In verse 3, and he wanted to see who Jesus was, but he was a short man. So notice the engagement that is at the moment. So here you've got Jesus coming. He's walking through and trundling through Jericho. And you've got another character, Zacchaeus. And all that Zacchaeus wants to do is what?
See.
He just wants to see Jesus. That's all he wants to do. Now verse 3, he wanted to see who he was. Didn't want to speak to Jesus. Didn't want to interact with him. But he was being a short man and could not. Because of the crowd, so he climbed up. In verse 4, he climbed up the sycamore tree to what? To see him. He didn't want to speak with Jesus. Since Jesus was coming that way. Now notice what interaction now Jesus now brings. The power of engagement that Jesus now locks into this occasion. Verse 5, when Jesus reached that spot, he looked up and said to him, Zacchaeus, come down. I must go to your house for tea. It doesn't quite say that. I must stay at your house today. So here Jesus was initially wanting to chance to just go through Jericho. Now Jesus is actually stopping and saying, I'm going to stay at your house for tea. Verse 6, so he came down at once and welcomed him in gladly. So now you can see there's some interaction that's taking place with Zacchaeus now. There's some engagement. Okay, there's some energy being expended. Verse 7, all the people saw this and began to mutter. He's got to the house of a sinner. Verse 8, but Zacchaeus stood up and said to the Lord, look, Lord, here and now I give half of my possessions to the poor, and if I've cheated anybody out of anything, I will pay back four times that amount. So now why do you think that Zacchaeus all of a sudden is saying those words? And I can tell you why, is that there was strong engagement between Jesus and Zacchaeus, and they would have been chatting, and they would have been discussing various things, because he was a wealthy man. So obviously Jesus was able to touch a couple of points in Zacchaeus's life. And I can tell you what was happening is that Zacchaeus at this stage was a person who had a number of questions or a number of queries tucked away, okay, in his mind, in his Bible notebook, whatever the case is. And he had been making note of these and storing them up. Initially, he just wanted to see Jesus. Jesus, through the power of engagement, now comes. And what does he do? He elicits these questions and queries that Zacchaeus would have had in his mind and brought them to the surface. And what's the power of a small group of a one-on-one conversation? Is that people can talk openly without fear of rebuttal in a large crowd. Okay, so you know what it's like with your friends. You can ask them some hard questions and some difficult scenarios which you might feel uncomfortable with asking in a group. You know, why do we do this? Why do we do that? What's the occasion here? I don't quite understand that. And so what actually happened is Jesus would have been able to elicit these questions out of Zacchaeus and had some good conversations. So why do you think Zacchaeus says, oh, I'm going to give half of my possessions to the poor? I can tell you why. Jesus would have been talking about himself and what his purpose is there. So if we go to Isaiah, so keep your place though here in Luke 19. Come across to Isaiah 61. We know it well. It's the passage that Jesus reads out when he goes to the temple. So now at the temple, this wouldn't have been the only time that Jesus read this scenario. I don't think so. I think Jesus read 61 to Zacchaeus in Zacchaeus' house while he's having tea with him. And he would have explained 61 there. Chapter 61 of Isaiah, the Spirit of the Sovereign Lord is on me. That's what Jesus would have said to Zacchaeus, because the Lord has anointed me to preach good news to the poor. To the poor? Zacchaeus is a wealthy man. And so Jesus would have actually been able to have some good conversation with him. He has sent me to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim freedom to the captives. And here's a man like Zacchaeus effectively captivating everybody's money. He was the chief tax collector. And release from darkness the prisoners and proclaim the year of the Lord's favor. And to comfort all who mourn, end of verse 2. And provide for those who grieve in Zion. Provide for those who grieve in Zion. And so Zacchaeus says, what does he say? I'm going to give. I'm going to provide. I want to give half of what I've got to the poor. And so that would have been like a conversation that would have been happening, not recorded for us, but happening in the background there with Jesus. And then why does he go on and say, back in Luke 19 we are now, I will pay back four times the amount. He says, if I've cheated anybody out of anything. Why does he say that? Because being a tax collector, conversations would have happened, and Jesus would have said to him openly, well, Zacchaeus, do you think you've defrauded anyone along the way, mate? What do you think about that, Zacchaeus? Here you're wanting to turn your life around, you're wanting to actually come closer to God, and you would have had a straight up front conversation with Zacchaeus. You know, how clean do you think your life is, mate? How many people have you taken one or too many pennies than you should have in your line of business? And Zacchaeus then would have thought about it. And where would Jesus have taken him? Well, you would have taken them back to the Old Testament and they would have had a discussion there. So let's go back. Let's go back to Exodus 12. I think I've got it right. I'll have to quickly check there before you get there, but I have got it. 22. No, it's not.
22.
Yeah. So yeah, 22 verse 1. 22 verse 1, and it says there, if a man steals an ox or a sheep or slaughters it and sells it, so he's taken it and then flogged it off, he must pay back 5 head for the cattle. So he must pay back 5 times for a cattle and 4 sheep for the sheep. So if he's nicked a sheep and done it, he's got to pay back 4-fold. But generally, if you go to Numbers, come with me to Numbers 5 and verse 7. So this is dealing about the restitution of wrong things. The Lord, verse 5, the Lord said to Moses, say to the Israelites, when a man or woman wrongs another in any way, or is unfaithful to the Lord, that person is guilty and must confess the sin that he has committed. He must make full restitution of his wrong and add 1/5 to it and give it to the person he has wronged. So Zacchaeus should have, he would have said, I would have what? Give back? The item plus how much? 1/5. Well, what does Zacchaeus do? He says, I'll give back 4 times. Okay. So he didn't need to do that. So Jesus would have taken to these passages here, and he would have allowed Zacchaeus to make up his own mind as to how much he would then compensate people for he believes he's been cheated. And so if we go back to Luke 19, where we were there, and so Zacchaeus says the words there, if I've cheated anyone out of anything, I will pay back, not 1/5, I'll pay back 4 times the amount of effectively a stolen sheep. And so you can imagine the energy that's gone on in this household here, this power of this engagement with Jesus as he's been discussing these things, and all of these queries that were sitting in the back of Zacchaeus' mind coming forward. And that's why then Jesus can have the powerful statement that he makes there in verse 9. And Jesus said to him, today salvation. Effectively the day of the Lord. The day of the Lord has entered this house. The power of engagement has been so great that the day of the Lord has entered this house today. Today salvation has come to this house. Because this man too is the son of Abraham. And notice he brings in Abraham now. So he would have actually taken Zacchaeus past all of the law, all of the issues of dealing with the law, the wrongdoings that he's had, and snapped him right back to Abraham. And why Abraham? Why take him back to Abraham? Because Abraham is the person of promises. The person of promises, and promises associated with the whole world. Everybody, all nations coming to the Lord. For the Son of Man, verse 10 there, for the Son of Man came to seek and to save what was lost. Came to seek and save what was lost. The whole world is lost. And the Son of Man, through Abraham, the promises to Abraham, comes and seeks the whole world. So there you can see, for me, the power of full engagement that takes place in conversations, in tea time events, and places like that. Let's go to another one. We're in Luke. Let's go back to a couple of pages to Luke chapter 10. So this is the story of Mary and Martha. And again, we'll actually look at the engagement and the conversations that take place. So verse 38, and Jesus and the disciples were on this way, and they came to a village where a woman called Martha opened her home to him. So whose home is it? Martha's home. It's Martha's home. And we know what we're like, hey? One, my wife and ladies. When you have guests arrive, well, do we just sit back and, you know, leave the place looking like a bombshell has hit the place? No. Forget it. The ladies are frantic, eh? They're up there, they've got the whole family buzzing there, you know, tidy this, put those on the cupboard, don't let the people see that. Tidy the dishes, wash the dishes, put away the dirty clothes, you know, everything's just like mayhem, you know, for a while. Like everyone's buzzing around like a beehive. Mark will know what beehive is like. And she had a sister there, so we carry on. Martha opened her home to him. She had a sister called Mary, who sat at Jesus' feet listening to what he had said. So you can imagine the story now. Jesus coming, and they're having a conversation, and there's Martha in the background making sure the baking's done and the scones are rising and everyone's been refreshed. And there Mary is just sitting down listening to Jesus at his feet. So you can understand the engagement and where the energy is being spent in the house, okay? Where the energy is actually taking place. So you've got two people in the same place, spending energy, doing different things. Okay, so that's what we've got to ask ourselves, is wherever we enter a place, we're spending energy there. So the decision we make is that when I enter this place, how do I best want to spend my energy that I've arrived here? Wherever it is, wherever it's house, your place, conversation, time with God, whatever the case is, how is the best time that I spend my energy? Because notice what Jesus says at the end of verse 42. Jesus says, but one thing is needed. Mary has chosen what is, my version, Mary has chosen what is better and will be not taken away from her. So you've got to ask yourself this question, wherever you are, the energy that you are spending, can you classify that as the best energy, the better energy that you spend, whatever it happens to be, whatever you're doing at that time, you say, I cannot be spending energy in a better way. Go back to verse 39. So Mary's at the feet of Jesus, listening to what he had to say. Verse 40, but Martha was, what was she doing with her energy? Was distracted by all the preparations that had to be made. In her own eyes, where was her energy being spent? In doing the right things. Not according to Jesus, though, hey? And that's where the thing is, that sometimes in conversations with each other, we need to be saying to ourselves, Mark, I don't think you're spending the energy in the right place, mate. You know, you could be spending it better doing this. He thinks, comes home, I've had a full day, you know, I'm exhausted, you know, flat out, you know. And what's he done? He's maximized his day and filled it out. But if he looks at the energy, has it been spent doing the better? And that's what we've got to ask ourselves. And I have to ask myself that all the time. If I ask, if you ask Jeanette, she'll say, David's spending the best energy doing the best things. Not a chance, mate. Not a chance. So that's what we've got to concentrate on, isn't it? But Martha was distracted by all the prayer. She came to him and asked. So she wants to get, you know, affirmity. Jesus, don't you care that my sister has left me to do the work by myself? She's spending energy. Tell her to help me. Typical thing. Go help me. Set the table, you know, put out the teacups. Verse 41. Martha, Martha, the Lord answered. You were worried and upset about many things. And isn't that so with life, eh? We are worried and upset about many things, eh? Many things. You know, the dog has done its due on the grass, and you know, the Lord needs mowing, and all that type of stuff, eh? We worry about it, you know. I haven't got another shirt to wear, or the, you know, hasn't been washed, you know, and it's, you know, I've had rain for 3 days now. You know, we worry about so many things. So many things. You're worried and upset about so many things. Verse 42. But only one thing is needed. So here's some strong engagement taking place, strong conversation. Mary has chosen what is better. And so we ask ourselves, do we do that? Do we choose what is better? And so you can see that the power of this engagement is associated with conversations, isn't it? It's conversations that take place between people, and that's the power of full engagement. And so I'm going to take you back now back to one conversation. So the conversations we've been looking at are between Jesus and people. Now what we're going to look at is a conversation between God and someone. And that someone is Moses. So come with me back to Exodus. And we're going to go to Exodus 3. So here's a typical scenario where someone has two different minds about what they should be doing, what is better and important, and where they should be expending their energy, and effectively what God has in mind for us, and where He thinks that we should be expending our energy and have full engagement. So we pick it up in Exodus chapter 3. Is that where I've taken you to? Exodus chapter 3. And it's Moses and the burning bush. So we're not going to read the whole story, but I'm going to pick up little snippets there. So we first of all get this bush that is burning. He's tending his flock. So what's Moses' energy in verse 1 there? Now Moses was tending his flock. Hey, it's a hard day's work, isn't it? Hey, yeah, you're out there in the midday sun. He's looking at the surf, you think, to his father, you know, Jesus, I'd rather be surfing, mate. You know, this hard work, all this and all this, you know, with the sheep going on. Anyway, so he's out in the desert there, and he's then also poof, this bush comes into flame and it's not being consumed. Verse 2 there, and there was the angel of the Lord appeared to him in the flames within a bush, and Moses saw that the bush was not consumed, and so he goes up to it. And then the Lord comes to him, verse 4, then the Lord, obviously through the angel, saw that he had gone over, and God called to him and said, Moses, Moses. And Moses says, here am I. So here's a conversation that's about to take place, and some full engagement, and then God speaks to him. But and we go on to verse 11 then. But Moses said to God, who am I? So God says to Moses, I want you to go to the land and speak to the king and tell him that, like in verse 9 there, now hear the cry of the Israelites has come to me, and I've seen the way that the Egyptians are oppressing them. So now go, I'm sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt. So that's where I want you to spend your energy. Moses, that's how I want you to actually spend your time. Go there and rescue the people. So now we're going to notice the two-way conversation that takes place between God and Moses as this engagement. And these are hardcore questions that come out. Hey, these are questions that we would be asking ourselves if God was speaking to us in this way. 11. But Moses said to God, "Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt?" You know, it's like someone saying, oh, you just go nip off to the prime minister there, you know, and have a chat with him. You know, you think, oh, this place is not, you know, it's a book you could do with a bit of economic growth. Yeah, you know, we're just quite keen for the prime minister just to give the okay to just, let's actually ask him to put a $3 billion investment here into Tepuki. And yeah, we're going to assign you to go. You think, mate, you know, who's the prime minister going to think when I start rocking up there? He's going to have second thoughts. So the conversation goes on, 12 there. And God said, I will be with you, and this will be a sign. And then he carries on, and Moses continues in verse 13, the conversation with God. He's getting a bit more tense now. Suppose I go to the Israelites and say to them, the God of fathers has sent me to you. And they will ask me, what is his name? Then what shall I tell him? Tell them. And God goes on to tell them that, say to them that I am who I am. And he goes on with the conversation. And you can see Moses is trying to get out of this. It goes down to chapter 4 now, verse 1. And Moses answered, what if they don't believe me or listen to me? What shall I say? The Lord, and they say to him, oh, the Lord didn't appear to you. So you're just trying to bluff us now in this whole situation. And then God speaks back to Moses and tells him to throw down his staff, and it turns into a snake. So we can pick it up in the middle of verse 4 there. So Moses reached out and took hold of the snake, after being a snake, and it turned back into a staff in his hand. This, said the Lord, is so that they may believe that the Lord, God of Israel, of their fathers, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, has appeared to you. And it's interesting, this word, this, I think there's actually some words that are missing out of the Bible at that point there, verse 5 there, where he says this. Because he just goes, if you read the sentence, it just says, this is so that they may believe. Or this what? You know, this sign should have been saying, or this wonder, or this miracle. And you can see then, for me, I would actually almost say that it was that God altered the laws of the universe. I mean, who's going to go to a snake like a coop and then it changes into a star? Okay. So there you've got a bit of quantum physics that's taking place there. God is altering the laws of the universe at that particular point in time to actually make that miraculous event happen. And then we go across and turn over in chapter 4 then in verse 10. Moses said to the Lord, again trying to push back, Lord, I've never been eloquent, neither in the past nor since you have spoken to your servants. I'm slow of speech. Well, Moses hasn't done too bad so far, has he? I mean, he's on question 5 in this debating with God. But you can see how he's trying to actually get out of this situation. And here we've got this power of strong engagement taking place. And then the next question, verse 13 there. And Moses said, Oh Lord, please send someone else. So he realizes, hey, he's backtracking, can't get anywhere. Then eventually he says, please send someone else to go and do this job. Even though you're going to give me all these helpers and everything like that, please send someone else. In the end, God says, no, I'm going to send you. But what I will do is I will send you a help meet for you. I'll send a companion with you that'll actually go with you. I'm going to send Aaron, your brother. Then the Lord's anger burned against Moses and said, God's got enough of this guy now. What about your brother Aaron, the Levite? I know that he can speak well. He is already on his way to meet you, and his heart will be glad when he sees you. He is already on his way to meet you. How's the hand of God in conversations like that? Hey? So we're having conversations with ourselves. We can imagine it ourselves at a group, at a tea party, and we're having conversations. And we have to have the faith that already God is actually in the background, altering things to make things happen, so that we already have our errands effectively on their way to meet us and assist us. And his heart will be glad when he sees you. Verse 15, and you shall speak to him and put words in his mouth, and I will help both of you speak and will teach you what to do. And isn't that a beautiful cameo also of Jesus and God, hey? Because that's exactly what Jesus was. Jesus was effectively Aaron to God. He was his voice piece, his person that did things for Jesus, did things for God. So here we can see that effectively how that we've had this power of full engagement. So those are the questions I ask you today then as we contemplate this. And as we call it, maximize our sweet spots or understand where our energy is that what are we spending our energy on? Is it on the better things that we do? The conversations that we have, let's encourage those conversations so that we can elicit those queries that sit in the back of our mind and not be scared like Moses wasn't scared with God to ask the hard questions. No, I don't want to do it. Send someone else. So-and-so is better than me. What shall I say when I get there? We have all of those hard conversations ourselves. But now we come to effectively the conversation that we have with our God and our Lord Jesus Christ around this time, this coffee shop, this breaking of bread event. And you can see why Jesus set it up, can't you? That last Passover, where he realized around a table, there would be what? Good conversation. There would be full engagement of people in that occasion. So here we are at our meal, at our conversation, the bread representing his body and his sacrifice and the wine, his grace. And as we do it each week, we re-energize ourselves so we can make that decision of what is the better choice that we have made. Thank you. Amen.